Thank you, Senator Warnock. It's been an interesting hearing, for sure, a lot of information, but I'd like to get some clarity because we do want to move legislation in this area. I do want to start with some information, though. My state is definitely seeing, you know, there's a debate here about are we seeing an increase in derailments. My state definitely, and it's great that we had a witness who was actually a marketing expert, because Ms. Allison said you can always take numbers and make them mean different things. So I'm just letting you know this is a 10-year window in my state. We've definitely seen an increase in derailments. And because we carry so much oil, it's always an issue for us in these communities. It goes through every area. So I wanted to start with you, Ms. Hamady, as it relates to legislation I originally introduced in 2015 saying let's get rid of DOT-111s, and now in the infrastructure bill, we got a 2029 date. This legislation says let's do it by 2025. Do you agree that that's the right?
Yes. The NTSB agrees that we should move up the date and eliminate the DOT-111s from hazmat service, not just from Class 3 flammable liquid service, but all hazmat service in this train. We had 16 DOT-111s carrying hazmat. Only three of them, though, would be covered under that final rule and the FAST Act.
Okay, do the rest of the witnesses agree?
100%. We filed jointly with shippers in 2011 to upgrade 111s, and following the 2014 rule, came to Congress because there was a 20-car loophole, there wasn't thermal protection, there weren't top fittings protection, so we're 100% on board. It's got to be done in a way that the manufacturers can achieve.
I'm asking you whether you support the legislation to move the date to 2025.
I support moving it forward as feasibly as possible.
2025?
Whatever the manufacturers can make happen.
Mr. Shaw?
Yes, we support the component of the Vance Brown bill for accelerating safer tank car standards.
Okay, let's turn to other issues, if we could, on your investments. One of the things I want to ask you about, Mr. Shaw, is you've been talking about how you've had less derailments, but I'm pretty sure we've seen an increase in accidents, we think of 14%. And so this issue is about the number of accidents. Ms. Hamady was talking about this video issue of the DuPont accident. And so it doesn't matter, you know, issues are issues. And at the same time period as this increase, 14%, we also have, you stated earlier that you invested $1 billion in safety last year. That was at the EPW hearing. However, data from your company provided to the Surface Transportation Board says you've cut network investments by 30% in just 5 years, and at the same time, accident rates increased by 60%. Meanwhile, the company made a record $4.2 billion in profits. So this is a discussion about, are we putting the right resources into the network? Are we putting the right resources, in your opinion?
Yes, Senator, we are. We're investing over $1 billion a year in safety improvements. Our capital budget over the last couple of years overall has increased about 30%. We're hiring at a record clip.
But this chart shows that you've had a 40, this is your own information from the Surface Transportation Board, a 25% decrease in infrastructure investment and a 22% decrease in the number of employees.
Senator, when I became CEO of Norfolk Southern in May of last year, we went on an aggressive hiring spree, and that continues to this date. And I'll note that last year, the number of derailments on Norfolk Southern was the lowest in the last two decades.
I think that Ms. Allison made it quite clear the damaging impact of these accidents and lasting impacts on our children. No, and you can't look at that stat, you're saying, and feel comfort. She can't put her kids to bed at night and feel comfortable about that. So what we have to do is figure out, are we shortchanging infrastructure investment? This is an issue across the board in aviation, in transportation, here at the rail. We're not going to take profits over safety investments. We are going to require, now I don't even think that's good business, But here, we're going to make sure that those investments are made across the board for safety. So I want to get to this issue as it relates to the workforce, you know, particularly this issue of what role they play in the inspection process. Do you think that the current system works, or do you think we need more enhancements there in workforce? The Brown-Vance bill obviously increases the workforce. Some of the testimony by Mr. Whitaker would say that we need more on the workforce side.
Senator, with respect to the Brown-Vance bill, we certainly support the provision that requires FRA audits of railroad compliance with railcar safety inspection programs. We also fully support the concept of a triennial review of railcar safety standards.
A triennial review? Or what does that mean?
Senator, my understanding is there's a provision in the bill that allows for updates every 3 years.
Okay. So you're saying, okay. If we could look at this chart here, that in March 17th, we asked you to send us information about standards here. And you stated that Norfolk Southern does not have policies that mandate a minimum or maximum amount of time needed for the inspection of a rail car. And yet this information shows that it is part of this document for rail car inspection that you are saying to your employees that the cycle time for a 50-car cut is at 0.5 minutes per car with one inspection. So that's saying you have to inspect one side of that car within 30 seconds. Mr. Whitaker, do you know about this?
I'm aware of this issue here. I know there's 90 points per side of a rail car that need to be inspected. Conductors, we know how to inspect most of those, but a mechanical force person, I always attribute they have the doctorate degree and they need to take their time, and we should not be putting safety on a timeline here when inspecting rail cars. We're going through communities with hazardous materials and very unforgiving equipment.
I agree. Safety should not be on a timeline. So, Mr. Shaw, what's going on here? I think you don't support the Brown bill as it relates to a requirement of more people than just the conductor on a rail car. But this is just an example of how I think the system is being shortchanged. And while the information age gives us all sorts of ideas about efficiency, we can't take that to the extreme when you end up cutting safety. And the safety standards, we have to have minimum safety standards, we have to have modernization of safety technology, and we have to have the minimum amount of people to do the job. So that's what's going to be required across every sector of transportation. And this committee is going to make sure that we get there, because we're not going to let people just keep, you know, putting money in the bank and thinking that you can shortchange safety. We can't shortchange Miss Allison, and we can't shortchange East Palestine. So what are your thoughts about at least getting rid of this, getting rid of this notion that it's 30 seconds?
Senator, I'm not familiar with a minimum or a maximum on rail car inspection duration. We do support evidence-based approach to enhance safety and improve outcomes for the industry, for our customers, and the communities we serve.
Well, maybe you can find somebody in your organization to get you this document, but it's clearly your document, and it's clearly what's being implemented. And I don't think it's the standard that we want, and I don't think it's a safe idea. Now, I'd like to go to this larger issue, which we might be able to get some agreement on. Mr. Comstock, in the underlying bill is requirement for training of local firefighting teams on dealing with this kind of material. Is this enough? Is there enough in there? Or do we need to put something in here about equipment? I asked the first panel about this.
I think it goes hand in hand. I mean, I think we have to have training, but I think we have to have specialized equipment, whether it's for monitoring or suits. And I also raised in my initial submittal that we need second set of turnout gear. And the best example for everyday firefighting is we have one set of turnout gear. And when I have to wash that, I'm out of service. In this rail car instance, I had three firefighters who were exposed. Their gear is contaminated. I can't use it. It takes 6 months to get replacement gear. That means I have three firefighters who are out of service for 6 months who can't respond to auto accidents or to structure fires. I was able to find one spare set of gear, and on two, I had to rent some. So we have, throughout this country, we're lucky in many departments have good one set of gear. Departments that have money have two sets, so you can wash one. And so that's just an everyday use that we need. And then when it comes to equipment on a hazmat incident, the specialized suits, which can cost $15,000 or more, or the specialized monitoring equipment, it's unrealistic for the federal government to provide that to every department. But we do need to look at a regional approach so we can call in those teams that can supplement what we're trying to do.
So we need to do more than what we have in the bill.
Yes,
and underlying
you.
Bill. Yes. I know this already from my work in 2015. Yes. Trust me, I already know this because I've talked to lots of firefighters across the state of Washington. And believe me, rail goes everywhere in our state. So, Mr. Shaw, are you willing to support what's in the underlying bill? Are you willing to do more than in the underlying bill to make sure local firefighting teams have the equipment they need?
Senator, we absolutely support what's in the underlying bill, and we are willing to do more to support firefighters. We just opened up a regional training facility in Ohio for first responders.
Yeah, I'm thinking something a little different. I think, you know, this committee has dealt with the oil spill trust fund. Senator Stevens did great work on that. It literally is about having the resources up front in a timely manner to have in a community. And the challenge here is going to be to figure out how to do that and where to do that. But I think if we're going to continue to move product like this and have this level of risk, we can't just leave it up to volunteer firefighters to be on the front line. So I do think we have to think about what is a way to put resources into the local community. So I appreciate the fact that you're willing to consider that. Mr. Jeffries, do you want to comment?
I was going to say, 100% agree and would love to work with the committee on how we best approach that.
Great. Great, like that. Okay, Ms. Hamady, did you have a comment about that?
A great place to look is PHMSA's Hazardous Materials Emergency Preparedness Program, which is about $28.3 million annually and has been there like that for years. It needs to increase. It is paid for by fees from the shippers and the transporters of hazmat.
Okay, so good. We get some consensus there. Okay, and what about, in general, the... what we covered. One thing I actually isn't in their bill. I don't think the video that you brought up earlier is in there. But you're saying, Ms. Hamady, that there should be some video communication. You're saying that there is missing video from this accident. Is that what you're saying? I don't know what I want to. Okay, you're just saying you don't have video. That it wasn't required, but there was video, but we don't have it because the engine moved on and went somewhere else and was. Videotaped over.
Yes.
Okay. And in the DuPont accident, you were mentioning how valuable that was. Why was it valuable in the DuPont accident?
Very valuable. First, some assumed early on, not us, that there was distraction in the locomotive cab, and we could see in the video that that did not occur. We also could see that there was some hesitation by the engineer around the controls. It was a new locomotive, and we determined through the investigation, including looking at the video, that they weren't provided adequate training, the train crew.
Okay.
So right now, the requirement is on... the requirement in law is on Amtrak and the commuter railroads, not on the Class 1 freight railroads, and we would advocate for that.
Mr. Whitaker?
I'd just like to piggyback on what the chair is saying. In regards to training, these Class 1 railroads have reduced their training programs down to bare minimum. When I hired on the railroad in 2000, I had 26 weeks of training. Nowadays, that's 6 weeks or less on these Class 1 railroads. We're hauling 200-plus car trains and hazardous materials, and that's not right. You're putting too much pressure on employees right now with inadequate training. And I'm sure these numbers, I would be curious to see what the retention rate is. I know Mr. Shaw brags about how much they've hired people. What's the retention rate of people sticking around? I'm an advocate for two-person crew, obviously, but if I'm not hearing the CEO of my company tell me I'm going to have a job, I'm going to be looking somewhere else.
Mr. Whitaker, what standards should we be looking at, given that we have had this transformation into longer trains? I don't think we've heard this intermittently through the committee, but this is a sea change.
Right. So to Ms. Hamady's point about how much technology is on a locomotive, as an engineer by craft, I'm looking at four computer screens. I am busy. I don't even have time to look out the window of my locomotive half the time. I'm depending on the conductor over there to be my eyes and ears and keep me in check. Enhanced training for that conductor would greatly assist the locomotive engineer, greatly. And I think in the railroad industry as a whole, we've lost a lot of our expertise over the years because we have people that have zero railroad experience running our railroads. We could be so much more efficient and do so much better if railroad management would just listen to labor. We could move trains without incident. We could make things more safe, but they just got to listen.
What would you have done in this instance, do you think, given that we are talking about a wheel bearing?
What I feel should have been done with the trending defect detector technology, and this is something going back to last year that I sounded a whistle on. We need to eliminate trending defect detector, keeping that information to ourselves and our headquarters. Mm. Okay, let's just take the chance. Let's move this train on down the line. That's what they're doing. What should happen?
You're saying that they knew that this train had a weak spot? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
You're saying they knew the train had a weak spot?
If their trending defect detector, according to the NTSB report that I've read, they've seen this car trend hotter and hotter over the course of three detectors, I believe. That information is going to somebody at Norfolk Southern, and they're not conveying that information to the railroad crews.
Mr. Shaw, did someone at Norfolk Southern have that information?
Senator, my understanding from the NTSB report is once the train hit the third detector, which showed that we hit the threshold, then the crew acted appropriately. However, the part had already failed.
Why did you keep putting the car on is the question. I think Mr. Whitaker is saying you should have had a signal. Listen, this is definitely where this is where I'm going. I don't know. We'll have to ask Senator Cruz and my other colleagues where they're going, but I'm telling you right now, we are going to use transparency and technology and make sure that people are getting that information as fast as possible. We are going to use NTSB to help us hold the FAA accountable, and we're going to help them, as they are today, hold this accountable. We have to look at safety trends. We have to look at what's coming at us because they are telling us in advance. That's what technology can do, tell us in advance where there's a problem. But we can't ignore that because we want to make some more money. We have to go and say, we're going to make the investment and we're going to make sure everybody has the information. And that's how we keep on top of safety. Ms. Hamady?
I would just add, so in Atlanta, Norfolk Southern has an advanced train control desk. And what they saw there at the second wayside defect detector was a non-critical alert. It wasn't a critical alarm because the threshold at the time was 103 plus about 10 degrees from underneath the train of above ambient. And so they got a critical alarm at the last one, but by that time, the train was in the process of derailing because there is a little bit of a delay. The crew will get information But at the train control desk, the entire train needs to move past that wayside detector before the train control desk has that information. With that said, they're also at the same time dealing with other trains that may have warm or hot bearings.
So you're saying, I don't, Mr. Whitaker, what are you saying? That before this, knowing that the information was there, something should have happened on these cars, and somebody, if you would have had the information and the workforce would have had the information, they would have asked for some further inspection. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying. When you're on a train and you're passing over a defect detector, if that detector senses a wheel bearing hits a threshold, we hear a beep alarm. That tells me as a locomotive engineer, all right, I'm not going to apply the train brakes on the train because I don't know what's wrong with them. I'm going to go into what's called dynamic braking, which slows the locomotive down and slows the train down. So I'm going to come to a safe stop, and once I clear that detector, it's going to tell me what's wrong. But in this case, if I see my tire pressure on my car losing air, I'm going to pull over and stop and check that out, right? If I own a railroad and I see a wheel heating up, I'm going to protect my investment, and I'm going to call that train crew, hey, I know you're not meeting the threshold here, but maybe you guys need to stop and go back and check this out. It could be something, a handbrake applied on a car or a stuck brake, something that could be addressed right then and there. So once it starts trending, we need to stop and check it out. No matter if we don't even hit that threshold, let's take the safest course of action.
Thank you. All right, Senator Cruz, thank you. Do you have a follow-up for second round? Sorry, I kind of took my first and second round together.
All
but
good.
I think we're nearing the end for our witnesses. You've been very patient, and thank you for putting we've been here for a long time here, so we appreciate it.
Well, thank